Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who sea shanties his way through Surrey, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Oh! No, I'm not going to. There's a little taste.
The videos you sent us were glorious. You were having a lovely old time walking down your local high street, belting out some sea shanties.
This trend is custom designed to ruin my girlfriend's life, essentially.
Is she very self-conscious about you doing this?
No, it's just she's just being exposed to sea shanties several hours a day. You know, the first couple, that's all fun. That's the good laugh. But I can tell. It's very clear. It wears you down over a course of weeks, you know?
Yeah. When it first became a thing, I was going to suggest that we write a Spurs shanty, and then I realised how naff that would be very quickly because, I mean, it just everything was shanties for literally a week. Which I can see Nathan's not unhappy about that. He's quite pleased for everything.
I think
shanties.
The trend is gone already, but I'm still enjoying that. I mean, I was already singing a lot. I sing a lot. I'm a keen singer.
Nice. Shout out to Oregon Shane, who says, just got my XG long sleeve tee and the women, they won't stay away. Enjoyed that.
Keep reading that tweet, please, because it's been copy pasted in. I would like you to finish reading it.
Okay. Here's what it says at the end. High voltage sign, flushed face, smiling face with three hearts, rolling on the floor laughing, sign of the horns, high voltage sign, hashtag dope AF.
I think that works in podcast form, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's like having a screen reader read your emojis. we've got long-sleeved XG t-shirts on our shop at theextrainge.co.uk/shop. Go and have a look. You might like the hats too. Or you might not. I like them. I think they're quite cool. Buddy, you've got a hat.
Everybody's decked out in full Extra Inch merch.
Nice. So we are recording this on Tuesday this week. That's because we played Wickham on the Monday. We did a live X-Subs Q&A pre-Wickham match, which was good fun. Lots of fun. I was a bit overexcited, I think, for that, to be honest. It went... And some of the questions, to be honest, our X-Subs were sort of leading us astray, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll come on to that later because there's going to be a whole section of this podcast about one of the questions we discussed last night. Not the fuck, marry, kill, Klopp, Mourinho or Poch one. We'll keep that for X-Subs only. We're recording post-Wickham and pre-Liverpool, which means we've got a very small window for this podcast to be relevant in. But let's do the Wickham game. Let's talk about the Wickham game. I was surprised by the team selection because I thought we'd go strong. Bardi was completely spot on and said we would fully rotate, which we did. Nathan, how happy were you with the 11 that went out?
It was kind of necessary. Bardi's right because of the just absurd amount of games we have in a week, essentially. The thing is, it's like when we rotate, we don't rotate, because the whole game, as it played out especially, is to like keep it level for like 60 minutes and then bring on the first teamers to get the win at the end, thereby achieving both, like, them having been rested for an hour of football, and also you get the result out of those players as well. So
yeah,
I mean, that was very much you look at the scoreline, 4-1 easy, smash them, you know, walk in the park. But that's, you know, by bringing on Ndombele and Kane and Son at the end.
Yeah No, I mean, it's a very fair point. I'm personally not keen on this A team, B team thing. And my ideal strategy for rotation would be to have sort of 15, 16, maybe even 17 players that you can play in any combination that you're comfortable with, that all know the system, that can all slot in. That's my preference with rotation. I think A and B teams is problematic for a whole bunch of reasons, but mainly motivation, to be honest.
Sure.
But I didn't think we were unmotivated, or demotivated rather, against Wickham. I thought there was, you know, the players were up for it, in inverted commas, as we say.
Bale was.
Yeah, I mean, so let's start with Bale, because there was lots of criticism of Bale's performance, particularly in the first half. I literally thought he was like our most eye-opening player. He was getting into good positions and doing things, and looked much more like old Gareth Bale than we've seen so far. Bardi, what did you think of Bale against Wickham?
You know, I thought it was okay. I thought it was a little bit wasteful in the first half. It's difficult to get a handle on it, because commentary seemed to be bigging up Lucas's performance, and I thought Lucas was typical Lucas, where it looks all well and good, but if you actually analyse what he's done and what he's provided to the team, it's nothing. He's someone in the office that does everything, but when you actually break it down at the end of year review, hasn't produced a single usable piece of work. Whereas Bale tried a few things, had a few good ideas, but ultimately they didn't achieve anything. But I thought as the game wore on, he looked better and better, and he seemed to grow in confidence. He was going in on his, cutting inside as he always does on his left, but he was also going on his right. He was trying to link with Harry, and he looked better as the game wore on. I'm not sure whether I would start him in the next match, but I thought his performance was fine, and I thought his goal came at a crucial time. And the reason why we pay £300,000 a week for Bale is for those crucial moments for him to step up, and he did step up. Going in at 1-0 is obviously, it's very different to going in at 1-1. So I was perfectly happy with Bale.
I think we also need to note that we're not a team that is spoilt with goals from other players aside from Kane and Son. And so we need to sort of appreciate when other players are chipping in, and Ndombele being one who's chipped in regularly recently. And now Bale adding goals as well. I mean, that is going to be incredibly helpful if it continues. I think you're right, Bardi. I don't think he should start the next game, but I definitely think he now has made himself a genuine option as a substitute. And I think we'll start to see him coming on more. Nathan, what did you think of Bale's performance? I mean, one thing I was encouraged by was a couple of bursts of pace.
Yeah. I mean, that's the main thing. Like, the question with Bale isn't like, is he a good finisher? Is he a productive, you know, final third player? Like, of course, that's the player that he is. You know, is he smart off the ball? Is he technical? That kind of thing. It's like, can he get to match fitness? Can he be sharp again? Can he be involved in the game? And that's what he was. And he missed a few shots and he put one away. And it's like, you know, so really, really promising, because I think that he was like approaching written off time, essentially. And I wonder if that he simply needed like months and months of fitness training, if that's how far off he was from where he needed to be. You know, I've had ongoing knee, hip and back injuries for the last year and a half, really. And I know that when I'm finally relieved from them, I'm going to be way, way off. I'm going to be off my 5K pace. I'm not going to be able to complete 5K for several weeks, you know? So it's going to take, you know, if you're out that long, and I think that he has been away from match fitness for so long, maybe it just takes him that long to get close. And you know, playing as many minutes as he did at that higher tempo, obviously it helps the speed that Wickham play at. But yeah, really good to see him involved, creative, bringing other players rather than just going for goal every time. But his best play was his goal, and his goal was essentially him playing as a centre forward. I still think that probably our better use of him would be to play him up top. I don't know, but that's a hard call because, again, you want to get him involved, and the best way for him to get involved is when he's away from defenders and picking up in wide areas. So that's a trickier one. But yeah, I think Bale, apart after the win, the best positive from that game is that the Bale looked alive, essentially.
Yeah, for sure. There were a couple of nice moments where Harry Kane pulled wide, picked up the ball, and Bale instinctively essentially positioned himself between the posts. And I just don't think we have many other players that do that. And that's a really useful thing to have in the squad. I was impressed. I was impressed with Bale. You know, it's only Wickham, et cetera, but Bale looked better than he had previously. And I thought he showed some good signs. Let's talk about how the game went more generally. It started off very promisingly. We seemed to be well on top. And then it quickly became obvious that Wickham carried a genuine threat themselves through Ikpeazu, who is a newcomer to Wickham. He's only just returned from injury. They're hoping that he can sort of take over from Akinfenwa as their main number nine. He looked impressive. Mugwe, who I've never seen before but is on loan from Leicester, looked very impressive also, as did Fred Onyedinma, who has been at Wickham for a while on and off. He's had various loans, and he ended up scoring their goal. Nathan, were you surprised by how good Wickham looked sort of when they had the ball in our defensive third?
I mean, obviously there's an extent to which we have the ability to make teams look better than they might normally be in possession by letting them have the ball for a little while, which is not something that we as a club have done for years and years and years.
That's true.
So that's always going to be a bit of a jarring contrast to us. But I mean, I don't mean like rude or dismissive or anything, but I didn't think that much of Wickham. I didn't think much of their setup or their players, to be honest. There wasn't much, you know. They got their goal against us, and they made it hard for us, for our B team, and prevented Bale from you know, scoring three goals or whatever, obviously. But I wasn't especially... The most impressive thing about Wickham Wanderers was their manager's leather jacket.
He is a rock star. I mean, he's literally a rock star.
I think Windy's opinion on Wickham is a little bit clouded because apparently his best mate supports Wickham. But I think, you know, it was a cold Tuesday. Well, it was a cold Monday evening. Wherever Wickham is, not too far north, but it was a cold evening, our B team, and they made it uncomfortable for the first 20 minutes or so, and they scored a goal, but they weren't that great. Like they weren't Brentford. Brentford, you could see Brentford had a style to them and a way of playing. Wickham worked. Let's make Toby Alderweireld look like a little child, and that's what Ikpeazu did. I've never seen Toby look so small, and he did look like it. He looked like a granddad at a family reunion, like hanging out with a couple of the grandkids who are rugby players. He was so small and fragile. I wanted to put a blanket around him. And I think, luckily for him, that's what happened in the second half. The referee did look after him a lot. But yeah, there was nothing there to be impressed about from Wickham. They made it uncomfortable. They got a goal, but then we could have been 3-4-1 up at halftime. So I know it took until the last 10 minutes where they fell apart and we scored our goals, but they weren't that great, you know.
I actually agree for what it's worth. I felt, they had a presence in the final third, but their midfield was really poor, really, really poor. Harry Winks was at times carrying the ball straight through their midfield. In fairness to Wickham, they had only trained once in the previous 9 days. They were playing 36-year-old Matt Bloomfield in midfield. You know, they're a club with limited resources. Interestingly, they actually play Brentford this weekend, so a direct matchup of our two most recent Championship opponents. I suspect Brentford will win that handsomely because they're a very good team. The very promising thing was how we did show a ruthless streak once we made our changes, and also no little amount of skill. And Nathan Ndombele was staggeringly brilliant again.
Yes. There isn't really much to add to that, you know. That's when you have that level of technical skill, when you can embarrass some of the best teams in the world, and then you get 10 minutes against Wickham Wanderers, you're going to look ridiculous, you know.
Is he, Nathan, one of the best players you've seen at Spurs?
He's one of the best players in the world.
Yeah, I strongly agree. I feel like, we should talk about this. Buddy, we should talk about your tweet, actually. Sort of comparing him to Dembele, and this is a thing. It's become a thing, and it's partly because their names sound the same.
Go
on.
I wasn't comparing him to Dembele. I was just watching Ndombele last night, and this guy is, as Nathan said, is one of the best footballers in the world. And then I started thinking about Dembele, and when we were talking about League Cups or something a while ago, and I went back and revisited the League Cup final against Chelsea, and Dembele didn't start. He came on as a substitute, and I thought, that's bizarre, because I've always had this impression that Dembele was an integral part of Pochettino's team, but he wasn't. It was Bentaleb and Mason. They were Pochettino's preferred starting centre midfield duo for a year until something happened. So has there been a lot of revisionism? I'm not saying Dembele was a bad player, but in his years with us, how many good seasons did we get out of him? And are we already seeing from Ndombele the goals and the assists and the kind of presence in the team that perhaps we didn't get for a long enough period for Dembele for him to be regarded so highly by our fan base? That was the question I was pondering today.
You have 15 likes on that tweet and 34 replies, so really, really good work on...
Ratio!
To be fair, a lot of them is people discussing Ledley King and whether Ledley King was any good, so at least seven is that. Mm. But... I think it's a question. I think it's something that needs to be discussed and something that can be spoken about, because I know Dembele was an incredible player, but was he that incredible? And does he get so much credit for maybe two seasons or one and a half seasons of top class play? Does he get too much credit compared to someone like Eriksen who sustained it for maybe four years? That was what I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the two things that we conflate with our language are like the ability of the player and him at his best, and the sort of ability to use that ability over a number of years, over his career. And we all know exactly how incredibly good Moussa Dembele was at his best when he was match fit. Again, one of the best players in the world. Maybe the best central midfielder. Just behind Modric, just behind Thiago over the last 5 years. But, as you rightly point out, only when he was match fit, because he suffered with injuries and a continuous hip problem, basically his entire career, or at least his entire Spurs career. And so, yeah, we got, I don't know, maybe two seasons total of his very best out of him. And if he had had a career in which he didn't suffer from those hip problems and he'd been at his match fit best for 8 seasons, then he wouldn't just be someone that Spurs fans say, wow, what an incredible player. He probably wouldn't have remained at Spurs, to be realistic. He would be rightly, remembered as one of the very best midfielders to have ever played the game. So that is the difference between, like, you know, who he is and what he's achieved. This is not the same as like what trophies have you won. Like this is what performances have you been able to put in week out. So yeah, the Eriksen comparison is a good one, and I think that like look for a non-Spurs example, someone like Daniel Sturridge, really incredible footballer, was one of the best strikers in the world for a season and a half, and then injuries have ruined him. Maybe a more favourite, another level striker, Michael Owen, who hit those super high notes early on and then dwindled away. It's a similar kind of thing, you know.
I think there's more to it, though, as well, in that he is absolutely elite, or was, I should say, absolutely elite at the things he did well. But that was quite a sort of limited skill set. So
I don't think it was, though. I don't think it was. I see what you're saying. Like sorry to cut you off, by the way, but from like a technical and athletic standpoint, he shields the ball, carries the ball, makes short passes, right? Is able to receive on the turn, dribble around a player, and has a limited passing range, right? Not many things, right? But like what you're capable of doing physically, and again, what you're capable of achieving on the pitch, aren't necessarily aligned. And with essentially these three simple tricks, like he was able to run Premier League games weekend, you know, for any, whenever he was match fit, he was able to run a Premier League game with some decent defensive work, with an incredible ability to carry the ball. That's it. That's all you need to be, again.
That's what I was going to say, basically. Okay, it's a limited skill set in the sense that he's only got like his key core skills were limited, but he could just use those to their absolute maximum, and so it didn't matter that he wasn't particularly great at passing. It didn't matter that he didn't have great vision. It didn't matter that he only scored once every 20 games or something. And so sort of the comparison with Ndombele, I understand why people talk about Ndombele and Dembele and Dembele when they're talking about midfielders, because, you know, they both play in midfield. They're both incredible dribblers. But what they achieve on the pitch is very different. So Dembele was exceptional at screening, I think, and receiving the ball and progressing the ball. But Ndombele is better at, you know, progressing the ball into the final third, shooting, his long-range passing, his expansive dribbling. So he doesn't just sort of beat players and then lay off. He beats players and then runs towards goal. And also, Ndombele's vision is ridiculous. His football IQ is ridiculous. I don't think I've ever been more excited about signing, to be honest, than I am about Ndombele. I feel, you know, obviously I've been very excited about Harry Kane. Son, I have really enjoyed watching grow, but oh my God, Ndombele is just like one of my favourite players to watch ever in a Spurs shirt, and I can't wait to see what he achieves next. He's really special. And while we're on this subject, we did get a question in the Discord from Jamie T, who said, if you had to make a midfield three of Eriksen, Dembele, Ndombele, Højbjerg and Wanyama all in their prime, who would you pick? I mean, I think that's easy. I think it's Eriksen, Dembele and Ndombele, isn't it?
Who wins the ball?
Yeah. You're
like a combination of all of them?
That's a really nasty question.
Who needs to win the ball when you've got the ball all the time?
I think you need one of Wanyama or Højbjerg in there. And I think that... Okay. Wanyama, Dembele was sort of a problem midfield for us for a little while. We played them in front of a four-man defence in a 4-2-3-1. And we had some problems because both of them are ball carriers and short-range passers. We became easy to limit off for a while. And then we moved to a back three in which wide centre-backs could push up and we could manipulate things that way and get some longer passes going. Even though Wanyama, I believe, is... I would even say considerably better than Højbjerg defensively. If a Højbjerg and Dembele midfield has essentially everything, so I. But then why am I dropping Ndombele? It's such a ridiculous. I don't have an answer. I can't drop any of those players. I can't. There's three of those players I can't drop. And then I still need one of the other two.
you play four of them.
Yeah, I would. You know, yeah, I would play all four of them. I'd play Ndombele as the 10, and I'd play Eriksen wide left or whatever.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, no, I get it. Speaking of passing range, Højbjerg played a really nice pass to Ndombele for his ridiculous double chop goal. It was a really, really intelligent pass from Højbjerg through quite a tight gap, and I was very impressed by that.
The correct answer to that question, but that you're both too scared to say, is you play either Wanyama or Højbjerg, pick your defensive midfielder of choice, and then alongside them you play Ndombele and Eriksen. Just be brave enough to drop Dembele because the others can pick up the slack that he offers. Just be brave enough and accept it. Join me. No. Join me on my hill.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50,
luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So we had another question from someone on Discord, and this was in our live Q&A pre-Wickham, and it got us all thinking. It was really good. So it's from Tony Starks. Tony said, basically, he said, Jose's football at both United and Spurs is seen as negative. Is this because he doesn't trust the centre-backs he has at his disposal, and they're not at the same level he had elsewhere? And are our tactics designed to sort of add protection to those weaker centre-backs? Bardi's gone away and done some research on what centre-backs he had elsewhere in his career. So, Bardi, talk us through it.
So what I've done is I've gone and looked at the centre-backs that he played primarily in his career through Porto, Chelsea, Inter and the rest, and then looked at who he signed. So at Porto, he had a young Ricky Carvalho and George Costa, whose named the Tank. So he's inherited two solid centre-backs here. But I think what we need to remember is having centre-backs is the key to any successful team. Unless you're Guardiola and you're able to deflect away the weakness of your centre-backs because of possession and everything else, your centre-backs are always going to be crucial to winning titles and winning cups. And then at Chelsea, he's got John Terry, who we all dislike as a human being, but remains a fantastic Premier League defender. And then alongside him, he puts Carvalho. And then you've got a typical Mourinho centre-back where you've got players, you've got left and right, and you've got two players who he trusts. And you can see that trust follows Mourinho throughout his career, because when he goes to Real Madrid, who's the first player he signs? He signs a 32-year-old Carvalho and then puts him alongside Pepe. At Inter, a really successful spell, he's got Cordoba, who's a legendary Colombian defender, and Walter Samuel, who was nicknamed The Wall. He's inherited these, plus he's got Materazzi alongside him, who's a lunatic but a fantastic defender. And then the season he wins the Champions League, he adds Lucio to that. He goes out and signs an experienced 31-year-old defender who's, I think he'd won the World Cup with Brazil. He'd won the Champions League before with Bayern. And this is also follows that Mourinho, he likes his experienced centre-backs. And we follow that throughout his career. Cahill, Terry, once again at Chelsea. At Real Madrid, he's got Carvalho, Pepe. And then Ramos becomes a centre-back, and then he plays Ramos. But he also signs Varane, which shows, I don't know whether it was Mourinho that signed him, but does show he has an eye for a centre-back. But then he comes back to England and things start to unravel a little bit, primarily at Manchester United, where he arrives and they don't have anybody at centre-back. They've got Phil Jones, Smalling, Marcus Rojo. So he signs Eric Bailly, who's okay. You know, he's not bad. He's an okay defender, but there's faults there. And in his first season, he finishes sixth. And he gets panned for negative football. And I think a lot of that is to do with his centre-backs just being so poor. He tries to fix it by signing Lindelof for 35 million. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work either. And Lindelof still, although he's found a bit of form now alongside Maguire, still not very good. And in the final season where he's sacked, there's a failed bid for Toby Alderweireld. So you could see that throughout his career at Manchester United, he tried to fix that centre-back issue, but he was unable to do it. So I think the way we play now is to protect a group of faulty centre-backs. You've got Alderweireld, whose legs are going. You've got Sanchez, who's regressed and not the player that we all hoped he would be. And Dyer, who tried a career in centre midfield and now he's gone back to defence because he's not able to get around the pitch and he doesn't have the vision to be a defensive midfielder. So I do think these last 4 years in the Premier League, he has tried to protect his centre-backs. So I think that is a large part of why we play the way we play. So yeah, I agree with Tony Starks.
It's great stuff, Bardi. It's great research. Really interesting to sort of see what he's had in the past. You mentioned that Guardiola's method of protecting his weaker defence is through possession. Mourinho at Spurs so far has certainly been to sort of bunker in and have plenty of defensive players around them and to play deep, protect the box. Play on the counter. Nathan, do you think there's any way around this? Do you think it's simply that Mourinho will sign another centre-back, or do you think he'll come up with some way of making this work with our current players?
No, I think he will want to sign a centre-back. Probably, he's going to be waiting till the summer. You reminded me that, like, yeah, United were in for Alderweireld not that long ago, and it's funny that, like, now he's not in the team for Spurs under Mourinho. It's similar with, like, Deli. Deli was strongly, you know, Mourinho was instructed and wanted Deli, wanted Alderweireld, and now he doesn't particularly want either of them now that he has them. That's an interesting one. I think Bailly, by the way, Eric Bailly is a very good defender, just had injury issues, as we were sort of discussing earlier, with, like, you know, what you are and what you do. But yeah, no, I think that we will be putting quite a bit of the budget into a centre back in the near future.
He has tried to protect these, especially through Man United and at Tottenham. He has tried to protect them by signing defensive midfielders. He was the first one to start playing McTominay. I think he bought Fred. He's bought Højbjerg now. So he can see there's an issue, and he's trying to protect them just by, yeah, exactly, building a wall in front of them.
Mm. We've literally just been linked to Napoli's Maximovic.
Okay.
No comment from our Serie A correspondent.
No, I haven't seen much of him play. No, I haven't seen. I can't give a comment on him. But it does come down, when we were talking before we started recording, Liverpool won the league. They went outside Van Dijk and Alisson, which has a major effect. And yeah, obviously, if you've got top class centre backs, you do win matches and you can win titles. Apart from Carvalho and Lucio, he hasn't really gone out and scouted a centre back. He's just gone. I mean, they don't even scouted. One was his player, and the other one was a legendary centre back. The players he has bought haven't worked yet. So we'll have to see what happens with Roden.
Yeah, we really are in a bit of a pickle with our centre backs at the moment. We've got Alderweireld, who seems to be out of favour, and, I mean, if I'm honest, had an absolutely shambolic game against Wickham. I love Alderweireld. I think he's our best centre back still, but I was not impressed with the way he constantly got too tight to Piazu, and it was not a good look for him at all. It was the defending of a much less experienced player, and it concerned me a little bit that he kept making the same mistake over and over. Then we've got Dyer, who, you know, Dyer's Dyer. He's not a terrible player. He's not a great player. He's just fine. Davinson Sanchez, who hasn't progressed in the way that we would have hoped, seemed to be out of favour. Seemed to be someone who we might consider a bid for, and more recently has been back in the team. Roden, as Bardi mentions, we don't really know what's going to happen with him, but you know, he's starting to get some minutes now, so we'll see. Tanganga, who Mourinho has been on record as saying he sees more of as a fullback, I strongly disagree with that. I think Tanganga needs now, if he's not going to get a chance at the moment at centre-back, he needs to go out on loan and play centre-back for a season and a half with another team, and then we make a call on him after that. And Juan Foyt, who is already out on loan at Villarreal, but I suspect he won't be coming back, or not coming back to stay.
No, Aoma's playing right back on loan. Sorry, I've just talked completely over you. I just find it weird that, like, he's playing... I mean, he probably maybe doesn't have much of a Spurs future, but the reason I bring that up is the worry that, like, we send Tanganga out on loan to play centre back and he gets played a right back as well. Ugh. Why is Aoma playing right back? What's all that about?
Yeah, no, that is a strange one. Aoma is someone who did play right back, yeah, to be fair, at times for the under-18s and 23s, but for me was always much better at centre back. And I thought we would send him out to a team where he would consistently play centre back to give him experience in the role. But I also am sort of almost grateful for the fact that he's getting, you know, a weekly game. So if that means he plays right back rather than centre back, then I'm kind of all for it. And maybe he slips into a team next year where he gets to play in the middle, and we see how he gets on there. Yeah, I mean, let's talk about how we prepare for Liverpool. This will be dated very quickly, of course, because Liverpool's fast upon us. But Bardi, who partners Eric Dyer against Liverpool for you?
Well, I think it's interesting if we look at the United game and the Burnley game. Both of them pretty much followed the same blueprint. Obviously, United can counter a bit better than Burnley, but it still follows the same, that you just sit back, let them come at you, and they're unable to cut out the counter-attacks at the moment. They don't have Van Dijk stepping across and anticipating the ball into the front man. United cut them open many times with playing the Jose way with a crossfield ball and a counter-attack. Burnley did it as well by forcing an error from the centre-back and the goalkeeper. I think we're going to play exactly a combination of the two. We're better than Burnley at counter-attacking. I think we're probably better than United at counter-attacking as well. So I don't see any change from how we played at Anfield or how those two teams played. I think Bergwijn will start and will return to a midfield of Ndombele, Sissoko and Højbjerg. I don't see anything else other than that. Aurier at right back, Reguilón at left back. And then the only question mark is who plays alongside Dier. And I think we might see Roden there.
Oh, you have stolen my hot take. you can't. I really don't think that you can play Davinson Sanchez against Liverpool, you know, which leaves us Roden or Alderweireld, who just had a pretty poor game against Wickham and isn't in favour and isn't on form and has played too recently. So yeah, I think Roden might well be in with a shout.
Any chance he goes with the back three and plays Roden, Dier and Ben Davis?
I think that, surprise, surprise, I think that it will be all about getting Son in behind. And I think that he will want to start him wide. I think that we'll want to start behind a fullback and then move central. I think that's not impossible, but harder from a back three.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. It makes complete sense. And the other thing we talked about on the Q&A, the live Q&A, so apologies for the ex-subs that we're repeating this, but I think it is worth repeating because it was interesting, is how exposing the system is to limited players or players who have limitations. Limited players is too harsh. Players like Sanchez, who we've seen make mistakes fairly frequently, you know, playing close to his goal and being asked to make lots of defensive actions means that, you know, mistakes are going to happen, right? And if they do happen, you're right in front of your goal. So it's likely that there's a high chance it ends in a goal. So do you think in some ways, Bardi, although the system is designed to protect the centre-backs, do you think in some senses it kind of shows up their weaknesses even more?
Yeah, I think so.
You still love Sanchez, right?
I still think there's a defender in there. I don't think it's going to happen at Tottenham now. I think sometimes individuals just need a change of scenery just to get themselves out of their funk. I think he could still do a job at Premier League level, but I just think maybe his time at Tottenham is done. Liverpool are a funny team. They've got Thiago in there, who's an incredible midfielder and I think a massive upgrade on everybody else, but there's just something not quite right with them. I'm not going to go into that. We're not behind a paywall here, so I'm not going to go into what I think is probably at the heart of it. But I think there's an issue with individuals no longer gelling that well. There's a visible problem between Salah and Mane. There's not the same connection. Their front three now are starting to look like a group of individuals, whereas before it was just this moving kind of shark. You know when sharks attack tuna and do the stuff and force them into a food ball and force them towards the surface and then just chuck in? That's how the Liverpool front three used to look, but they don't look like now. They're just three individuals doing their own thing and perhaps the ball might bobble to one or the other one. So I think if we don't make any mistakes and we sort ourselves out at crosses, at set pieces especially, I think we might be all right for this. By all right, I think we might get a draw, but I think we might be all right.
Okay. Nathan, what are your thoughts on Liverpool recently? What do you think is going wrong? I mean, obviously they've had disruption to their midfield through injury, which hasn't helped.
Yep. It's that and general fitness. I think that's basically it.
Fitness, okay, interesting. You don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with the front three? You think it's simply fitness? I mean, what I'm leading towards here is do they need to freshen up their attack?
I don't think that's the problem. I don't think that's it. I can understand why people will feel that way about, like, you know, three players playing together year after year after year and the predictability about their combinations and sort of mental fatigue, but I don't think that's the issue. I think that Firmino, Mane, Salah are still three brilliant attackers, still very hard to defend against. Liverpool's issues are coming deeper in the pitch and again with their fitness levels.
I really think playing Thiago as the deepest line player and not an eight is a mistake as well. I'm surprised because Milner's played a bit in midfield recently and I sort of feel like he would do a fine job as a sort of more more of a holding player for them whilst their centre-backs look frail. I'm surprised that they've not tried that one out. But do we know if Henderson's back for Thursday? Because he's been a real big loss for them, to be honest. We shall see. We shall see. Bardi, I'm going to come back to you on this one as our resident dietitian. So this is from Matt Smith, who says, can you guys talk about Juan de Ramos banning the apple crumble? I know it's an old story, but I found it hilarious. Darren Bent spoke about it recently on TalkSport. So it obviously came to Matt's attention because Darren Bent spoke about it recently. But go on, Bardi, talk us through it.
I mean, Juan de Ramos was perfectly correct in that. There was also the rumour that he took away all the ketchup bottles from the table. You're a footballer, you're an athlete. I don't think there's many athletes out there who are smashing apple crumble regularly, and especially pre-game. Like, what does that give you? It gives you a sugar rush, but you can get better forms of sugar. You can get better, it's got a bit of carbs in it. But yeah, you shouldn't. If I was a football manager, I'd be exactly the same. Eat proper food. The donuts are out. Everything is out. And I agree with Juan de Ramos. Darren Bent went on to say that was the reason why Juan de Ramos got sacked. It wasn't really. He got sacked because he got 2 points from 8 games and we were going to get relegated under him. But I think a football manager coming in and having control over his players' diets is a good thing. Players, for the most part, are children, and if left to their own devices, they'll do the easiest option. So I think it's okay to have their diet controlled. They're a professional athlete. They should know what they're
apple
eating.
Apple crumble is a real kryptonite for me. I had apple crumble last night. portion control is a big deal for me. I never know when to stop. I'm always can't fill me up, you know. If it's a slice of cake, if it's a couple of biscuits, you know, it's easy to use your eyes. But apple crumble, I had apple crumble last night. I was like, I'm going to have some custard as well. And then, oh, the bowl is basically entirely full and it's not even a small bowl either. So I feel like the texture of apple crumble makes it especially hard to control the portions of, you know. So I'm with Wanda on this one.
I mean, the thing is, yeah. It's all completely reasonable, isn't it? Your Bardi's right. These are professional athletes. why are they knocking back apple crumble? But that said, as a manager, you can't just sort of take away all the good things and not explain what you're doing. It has to be followed by like a detailed explanation of the benefits you're going to see from this, and then maybe rewarding them in some other, finding another way to reward your players. And that's obviously what Ramos lost. If Bent's come away thinking, you know, Bent said it sounds silly, but it's tough. You know, he's genuinely found it difficult to have treats removed from him. So Ramos needed to find another way to engage his players and make them feel like they're being rewarded in some other way. And perhaps the language barrier kind of helped.
Yeah, no, I don't believe it either. Why would he remove pepper? Pepper is a excellent seasoning to put on something which doesn't have any effect on you. Yes, I agree that too much salt is a bad thing, water retention, everything else, but pepper's fine. Most dietitians will tell you go crazy on the pepper, but relax on the salt.
I mean, with the ketchup bottle, he's missing a trick there, because surely, you know, ketchup, salt and pepper, you're getting on, you know, you've got the condiments from the table. That's an opportunity to talk tactics while you're having breakfast. You know, you move the tomato and ketchup around to show the roaming defensive midfielder. No.
What he should have done is remove the ketchup and put sriracha there instead, because sriracha you use a lot less of it and the sugar content is a lot less as well, I think. But either way, you'll use far less sriracha than you would ketchup. So lads and ladies that listen to this, if you're trying to cut back, remove ketchup from your diet and put sriracha there.
He loves it. While we've got Bardi talking about his specialist subject, Bardi, why don't you explain what you've been doing recently?
What have I been doing recently? I
do a lot of things. BBC.
Oh yes, I thought you were talking about like cooking or something else. I released episode one of Bardi's Book Club. I wasn't sure. I've been playing around with this for a while on what format to do. So I decided to do a one man pod and one man review, which was very strange sitting here talking to myself. But I read Tobias Jones's Ultra: The Underworld of Italian Football. So he's talking about the history of ultras, how their influence on the game. He followed Cosenza, which are a rubbish lower league team. He followed their ultras for a couple of seasons and talked about hanging out with them and all the kind of stuff that they went through. And it was an interesting book. I'm not going to spoil what I think, whether or not you should go and read it. But yeah, I finally got Bardi's book club out, which was a great personal relief. You know what it's like, Windy. I know you're also the same, that if you say you're going to do something and you continually don't do it, it plays on you. So I'm happy it's out there. And next month, there's going to be another Bardi's book club. Now I've got to read a book in a month, so I really have to focus. No more Football Manager.
Yeah, you've definitely got a bit of completed finisher in you. When you've committed to something and you kind of, you're halfway there with the task, it irks at you that you can't get it finished. So you've got to get it done.
I know. I'm if
the
I same. Say...
I hate not having tasks unfinished.
Me and you, we have an unfinished task now that's been there for many, many years. And I know, I can see your face on the video, that if I mention it, you already know what I'm talking about. It haunts me still, that edition of the Fighting Cock fanzine, the tactics edition, which we never finished. It's just there, and it hurts me every single day. And it's been hurting me for like 5 years.
Literally like a dagger into my kidney. Oh, God, yeah. Awful. Couple of questions and then we'll sign off. So this is from Ram, who says, what do you make of Mourinho's comments at the press conference recently about the most talented players in the academy being 16, not 18 or 19? I'll take this one, guys, if that's all right. I have opinions on this, and I sort of have a more general opinion that I'd like to share on the state of things in our academy as well. So I completely agree with Mourinho's comment that there are a group of players in the under-23s who are highly, highly, highly unlikely to make it to our first team. And there are some youngsters, you know, we know the names, Dane Scarlett, Alfie Devine, maybe even Hackett Volton. But, you know, there are some really, really, really good 16-year-old players at Spurs who are highly talented and have massive potential. But saying that in a press conference seems absolutely insane to me for a whole host of reasons, mainly because I can't imagine how deflated the older players must have felt after hearing that. I can't imagine how deflated the academy staff and coaching team must have felt after hearing that. It also sort of removes what I think is one of the greatest aspects of management, and not just football management, but management generally in any walk of life, in that to have the belief that someone can improve, that someone can get better, that someone can become something they're currently not. And I think it's so important to leave that open, that improvement open as a possibility in your own mind, and therefore in the mind of the person you're trying to develop. And I really took issue. I mean, I tweeted about it, but I didn't say too much because I really could have gone in, to be honest, and that wouldn't have been good for me or my mentions on Twitter. And the other point that I thought was worth mentioning around the academy is that this week we finally sold Anthony Georgiou, who turns 24 next month. And I just think that if you end up holding on to a player like Georgiou, and no disrespect meant to Georgiou, who is a not untalented player, he's a very hard-working wide midfielder who can also fill in at fullback, not a bad player at all, but clearly not good enough for Spurs' first team. And in my humble opinion, and it is a humble opinion, not good enough for Spurs' first team since he was like 20, it's been clear. Something's gone wrong if you've still got him when he's about to turn 24, right? That's not normal. We shouldn't be having players at that age who are so far off the first team. There needs to be a sort of exit strategy for these players, and it's been problematic. It's been problematic for a while. It's definitely, things are moving in the right direction under Mourinho with the change in the loan policy, but there's a lot of work to do for Spurs to fix this problem. And someone sort of pushed back at me for commenting on Georgiou's situation and saying like, well, you know, it's his choice. He could sign a contract. He could choose to leave and not sign a contract. And there are two things to that. Firstly, you know, if you've been at a club for a long period of time, and he had since he was a young child, and they're offering you a good living, and the alternative is you might not get a club, or you might get a club a lot lower down the pyramid, and you might earn a lot less money. You need a good agent, you need good advice to tell you that that's the right thing to do. And I think it's sort of almost immoral that the club continued signing him to contracts. But also, I think we need to sort of look at the message it sends to other players, and that's the most important thing. It's, you know, why would a young player want to do their scholarship at Spurs if this is what happens? We need to sort of show the young players that we've got coming through that even if they don't make it at Spurs, we're going to make sure they have a really good career in league football, and we're going to deliver them a top, you know, we're going to build on the top class work our academy structure has done for many, many years for them, and deliver them into the Football League pyramid. I think that's a really, really important, being able to sort of sell the dream, sell the vision. You know, we lost Noni Madueke, who is now absolutely smashing it. He left. He didn't do his scholarship at Spurs because at that time Mauricio Pochettino was seen to be sort of stopping players going out on loan, stopping a pathway, because he wanted to keep them in and around the first team squad, which was his opinion of the right thing to do, but, you know, not what I thought was the right thing to do, and clearly not what Madueke thought was the right thing to do, or his agent, or whoever. We need to stop making these mistakes with our academy. We need to have a proper strategy in place. And I'm definitely more hopeful under Mourinho that he's got the loan stuff fixed, but I do have some deep concerns about how we manage players post-scholarship still, and I'm yet to see a clear strategy, a clear vision. Anything either of you would like to add on academy stuff? No.
Nope.
Okay. Right, let's end on this one, because, yeah, why not? Fair Lumbo says, how big of a fee would it take for a club to buy Tongi Ndombele? At what point would it be worth it to sell him and maybe reinvest that cash, bearing in mind that with the way he plays, he may not be able to sustain it forever? In a couple of years, it may be worth it for us to sell him at peak value before he begins to decline / the end of his contract approaches, so we aren't left in another Ericsson or Rowe situation. I can see Nathan will be absolutely rubbing his hands together, because he loves these conversations around when's best to sell a player. But I mean, when you read it at first, a question about selling a player that is one of our best players and someone I've just described as the signing I've been most excited about, it sounds ridiculous to be considering that. I mean, that conversation might be taken out of our hands, to be honest, in a couple of years. But interested to get both of your thoughts. Bardi, let's start with you.
I mean, you're asking Nathan and I, and we both love selling Tottenham players. So I think 18 months, 24 months, 2 years. I think he'll be gone within two. But the problem is, we sorted that this week with Barcelona's finances have come out. They're not buying anybody of Ndombele's stature anytime soon. So it would be Real Madrid, but I don't think financially they're as well off. Who buys him? PSG. But they've got their own problems. So I think we're arriving to a point in across Europe with the pandemic and everything else that maybe there's not these clubs. China put a cap on their spending. There'll come a point where people won't be able to afford Ndombele for his price. But yeah, I think it makes sense to, in 2 years' time, if he continues on this trajectory, to sell him for 120, 130 million pounds, make our money back and then some. But who's going to buy him? Who's got that money? I don't think many clubs do.
Nathan, I guess it also depends on where we are as a team and as a club at that point, doesn't it? You know, are we challenging for titles in 2 years? If so, we surely wouldn't sell Ndombele. But what do you think?
I mean, yeah, this is the thing with the, like, we should have sold Dele at this point. We should have sold Eriksen at this point. Is that, like, were we actually turning down offers, or were we just not, like, you know, asking his agent to offer him around or whatever? It's are the buyers there? This is the thing, is like, it's all very hypothetical, because my position is that you should unless you're talking about Harry Kane, who for more sentimental reasons, it's important to keep hold of him. Everyone else is up for sale for the right price, you know? If I'd have to, like, really sort of sit and think about how much to sell a Ndombele for, it would probably be triple figures. But yes, even now, even right now, you should be open to offers on every single player you have, except for Harry Kane, because he's different because of who he is, because of what he means to the club, what he means to the fans, what he represents, where he grew up. But everyone else, yeah, all of our best players, you should all. And you have to have faith in your recruitment. So this is more working from, like, an ideal situation. But it's like, when the question is, what would you do? Then I also have to suppose that I'm good at recruitment, because if I'm only affecting one end of the sales decision, that's sort of a broken question. So the ideal club is run in a way that they are always open to offers for every single player, unless there are special circumstances like they are with Kane.
I don't quite know how to respond, because I know what you're saying. You're right. I mean, you're right that we should entertain offers for all of our players. But I mean, the first thing is I absolutely do not trust our recruitment team to replace Ndombele effectively. I just don't. And I also just think, like, it's more like, God, he's so good. And he could, you know, he's the kind of player that could win you a league. I really believe he's the kind of player that can win you a league. And I don't think there are many players like him in the world. And so I put him in the Kane category. I put him in the unsellable list, at least for a couple of years. I think maybe he moves onto the sellable list when he gets to like 27, 28, maybe. And even then, I don't know. I think Bardi's point's also a good one. We paid, what, 60 million for him. There's no way we're selling him for less than three figures, even at this point. And who's going to pay that? No, I don't think anyone can afford it. Maybe Man City can afford it, but we're not going to sell to Man City. We're not going to strengthen a rival. So it's probably a moot point anyway. But yeah, wow. You really do like selling all of our players, don't you guys?
Windy's house is full of like old clothes and stuff that he wore once, and he had a good night out in that shirt, and he's never going to get rid of it. Whereas Nathan and I would be totally minimalist. Nothing there. Let go, Windy. Learn to let go. Say thank you and let go. Put it in the box and take it to the charity shop.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, E. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.